so bad, we know it good. Blowing your mind like we knew we would. You know we're just strutting for fun, strutting our stuff for everyone. We're not here to start no trouble. We're just here to do the Super Bowl show.
Well, they call me Sweetness, and I like to dance. Running the ball is like Mickey Moe Mance. We had the goal since training camp to give Chicago a Super Bowl champ. And we're not doing this because we're greedy. The Bears are doing it to feed the needy. We didn't come here to look for trouble. We just come here to do the Super Bowl show.
This is Speedy Willie, and I'm world class. I like running, but I love to get the pass. I practice all day and dance all night. I gotta get ready for the Sunday fight. Now, I'm as smooth as a chocolate swirl. I dance a little funky, so watch me, girl. There's no one here that doesn't like me. My Super Bowl shuffle will set you free.
Welcome in again, friends, to another entertaining edition of Baby Oil and Blow.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Maybe entertaining.
Hopefully entertaining edition of Baby Oil and Blow.
It's possible.
Okay. I'm okay with that. With you as always, it's me. That's right, baby, Matto. And as always, the guy sitting across from me, you can be the Brunzel to my Blair.
I'd love that.
I'm talking Natonio Adams.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Here I am across the desk.
Yep.
We're where ready you reside. To get in this again, me and you, a little back and forth about the subject of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
It's been a whirlwind week of professional wrestling content so for much. The two of us.
Too much, some would say.
Long weekend on the road I had personally. Ended it. We went to a big pro wrestling show together, me and you, just trying to keep that kayfabe that we go everywhere together and everything we do is about pro wrestling.
Well, we had a special guest.
And we did also have a special guest, Davey R. Scheister, picked us up in his Lincoln Town car, had his people pick us up, and drove us out there to the Odeum in Villa Park, Illinois, where we watched Ring of Honor's Global Wars pay-per-view.
Global Wars.
Because that was a joint promotion with New Japan Pro Wrestling, huh?
Yep.
Yeah, so we did that till late night, and then...
Too late.
God, now we're watching 80s primetime wrestling and trying to review that.
And trying to stay awake.
I'm awake because, you know, all those body slams and screaming promos. Whew. I'm talking about on primetime wrestling, not on that Ring of Honor show.
No.
How many body slams there?
No. Just people flipping around.
A lot of flips.
Everybody getting their own agenda over.
Yeah, just like yelling out Twitter hashtags. Got guys wrestling stuffed animals. Got guys doing like sword fights with the turnbuckle pads.
It was a mess.
A lot of grab assing, hijinks.
Goofballs and get a laughs. That's what I saw.
You're hearing a lot these days about old boy Jim Cornette. He's a big 80s legend. Very appropriate for us to talk about him on this show because, you know, we love him. We love his act. Just every week now, he's going crazy, just like seeing some sort of new stupid goddamn thing that's happening in wrestling and then like talking about how all the people who did it should be raped and murdered and everybody gets all offended.
It's a strong opinion, but...
It's a very strong opinion. You know, he's a classic 80s heel in the way that if he's going to give you his opinion, he's going to give it to you blown up, crazy, on steroids. It's going to be nuts. That's what I was thinking. Like, hey, this Jim Cornette, like... He's got a screw loose. This man, he makes some good points. He's been around the block. He knows his shit about wrestling, but he's kind of got a screw loose. He's kind of not with the times. He's kind of overreacting. Cause, you know, we've been to a lot of indie wrestling shows. We've seen a lot
too many.
Seen a lot of this modern stuff, and there's things about it I don't like, but, you know, it's okay, or so I thought. Until last night. Yeah, I guess it was maybe like a good 5-6 years ago we were going to shows.
It's been years.
Yeah, Jim Cornette's right. Like, this shit is ridiculous.
It's not a good product anymore.
Ring of Honor used to be, like, the alternative one that tried to be, like, old-school throwback serious wrestling. Yeah. This show was just pure comedy stupidity.
It was all comedy.
You could take a little comedy in your wrestling, but, you know,
it doesn't mean
wrestling comedy is funny. It's very rarely funny. Unless you're like a Bobby Heenan or like, maybe for 2 or 3 years there in the mid-90s, Jerry Lawler. Like, you're not making many people laugh with your wrestling comedy.
I tell you what really confused me.
Okay.
And maybe the podcast is to blame.
Sure.
It was a card full of foreigners last night.
Absolutely.
And they were like all working face.
A lot of Japanese talent.
I don't get it. They're foreigners in the United States.
It's like I was looking
around.
They
weren't working heel.
And I didn't see many foreigners in the audience. So yeah. I was like, oh, this audience is really going to give it to these guys yeah. who look different from us.
Go
and
back
talk
overseas.
Yeah.
I love America.
So I don't know. That's not what's going on in wrestling fandom anymore.
So I don't understand wrestling
still
at all anymore.
Still heard some really toxic homophobia.
Well, yeah, still wrestling
here and there. Yeah, a little bit of that. So
the more
things change, the more they stay the same. You know,
I'll call you back out on it, mm-hmm. sir. Somebody called. Who was the wrestler? He called a wrestler in specific a FAGGOT.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
JEFF.
Yeah.
FAGGOT. No.
And I said right to the gentleman, "How do you know he likes other men?"
Well, he wasn't even showing any like indications of being a homosexual gentleman in the first place. So.
And if he is, it's 2017.
Yeah, this guy's just got that like locked, cocked, and ready to rock whenever he's trying to throw an insult at somebody. Like that's the word he's going to.
You're a homosexual.
So yeah, there's a bit of ugliness still going on in the world of pro wrestling fandom. But on a plus side, you know. You're reading all about all this toxic masculinity in our society right now mm-hmm. on the internet, in the newspapers. All these women coming out with these horrible stories of, you know, sexual harassment in the workplace, sexual abuse and whatnot. And it's just really disturbing, but it was really refreshing to be in a big room full of men who were, to the last one of them, completely afraid to even talk to a girl.
Oh, just terrified.
Yeah, so.
Just terrified.
That was a throwback to simpler times for sure.
I saw a lot of guys walking around with some baby doll, perfect woman.
Okay.
High six, low sevens.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that was nice.
That kind of baby doll.
That was nice to see.
First second, I thought maybe you were saying literally there were men walking around with dolls, and I was going to be like, oh, that does not surprise me, but I didn't see that.
Oh, you touched on what's going on in the news world today.
Yeah, I did a little bit.
Yeah, the toxic masculinity.
You want to do a deep dive?
I just want to, real quick,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's great that these women are stepping forward and we're paying attention to this now, but shame on y'all that you had to wait for these women
mm-hmm.
to believe this story, and you couldn't just take Corey Feldman's word 3 years ago when he was on The View.
I mean, Corey Feldman, a lot of years, has been talking about all these Hollywood guys and all the weird shit they do to him when he was but a young child. And
that's why his friend's dead.
I don't know. Maybe he's just had such a party guy vibe on the screen. We always thought, like, he's just goofing around.
Oh, it's his fault because he likes to have a good time.
You know, I got to say, I think the whole world owes Corey Feldman an apology. I think old girl Courtney Love was kind of early on this... Harvey Weinstein is a creep that needs to
But again, due to her cocaine intake, much
and,
like a Corey
people
Feldman.
People were like, "Yo, you know what? Like
people were like, "Nah, man.
You killed your husband, so we don't believe you when you cry sexual harassment."
But we support both of you, Courtney.
That's just wrong.
And Corey.
Courtney's not
we
a murderer.
Support your cocaine addiction here at Baby Oil.
Corey
and Blow.
Made a
You're
lot
always welcome.
Of questionable decisions later on in his life, but his fashion choices in the early 90s, late 80s were on point.
Oh,
that whole Michael Jackson period he went through was great.
He knows what he's doing.
Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that Ring of Honor show later on when we do the three count.
Ooh, that's a tease.
But right now we're going to go to that five count. This is how we do it first.
Yeah, buddy.
Because we have watched a pro wrestling show from the 1980s, and we are going to talk about it. That pro wrestling show was the primetime. Time Wrestling. That's episode number 63 for all y'all keeping track.
Ooh.
From 05/12/86.
Maddo's third birthday.
Third birthday.
I was
Happy
excited.
Birthday to you.
I was pumped, and then I was let down.
Did you like some cake that day, maybe? It could have been.
I probably got some bitchin' He-Man toy that my mom took the slime away from.
Oh, it's just... Moms.
Yeah. I got the slime pit for my birthday, and my mom took the slime away. You know what that left me with as a gift? A pit.
The pit. What'd you do with the pit when there was no slime
Nothing.
In it?
Nothing.
He just tossed it away, probably.
Oh, He-Man stuck in that pit.
Well, maybe next
year's
birthday won't be terrible.
He got out. Let's
okay,
jump into it.
So,
enough
the
about
quick
me.
Quick results from the Joe Louis Arena in lovely Detroit, Michigan. First off, our big opening match, we got George the Animal Steel. He is facing one half of the Hart Foundation, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, the big burly one with the
I like
ginger
the laugh
goatee.
He does.
That's a nice laugh.
Something like that.
Does that little beard stroke while he's doing it. It's pretty good. Steel wins this one after just walloping Anvil in the head. Anvil tries to bring a chair into the ring. He wrestles around with the ref a little bit. He's trying to get it away from him. While he's doing this, Georgie Animal Steel wallops him on the head and then pins him.
No, he pulls an illegal object out from his tights.
And he had something in his tights?
Yeah, he pulls something out from his tights, and he chopped him in the throat with it.
Oh, man.
I watched carefully, because then he tucks it back in.
I'll see that
But
closely.
The commentators failed to mention
Yeah, they
that.
Certainly didn't, and pretty smart for Georgie Animal Steel. You know, mm-hmm. He's usually an out-of-control idiot, and he had a plan.
Yeah.
It was like an early caveman plan, like I'm going to hit somebody with a rock, essentially. But
yeah, but
that's
it worked.
Still a plan.
It worked.
Second match is the second half of the Hart Foundation, Bret the Hitman Hart. He's got a different laugh, but still a kind of a distinctive laugh.
You know.
Puts his hands out, and he's like, So he's in there with CVAFI,
one of our favorites
we saw a couple weeks ago, who's basically a Samoan version of
garbage.
The old Superfly Jimmy Snuka.
Oh, my mistake.
Trying to recreate the Superfly. He's not so charismatic as the Superfly. That's why Bret gets the win, even though he's a tag guy, just beating a singles guy.
Just beating him.
Gives him a big old backbreaker and then just pins him. Business picks up right after this.
Mm-hmm.
We got our favorite wrestler on the roster, Iron Mike Sharp. He's in there against Corporal Kirshner, the big, what do they bill him as? An Army
an
Ranger,
idiot?
An Air Force.
Oh, yeah,
something
he's like 81st Airborne.
They make a big deal about announcing exactly.
Camouflage Carl.
What sort of, military service he was doing. Yeah, Bobby Heenan, not impressed. Keeps calling him Camouflage Carl. Close
Great
enough
bit.
As far as I'm concerned.
Great bit.
He basically got his name. That's all you need to know. Kirshner wins after a Samoan drop.
It was a backdrop. That's what they call it.
Yeah, it was a backdrop.
It's a backdrop.
I guess. And he stole it from, he's appropriating these moves from the Samoans. And once again, the commentators are not
Wait,
on
did
that.
A, he did a tour over there.
It's not very PC, but I guess this is the 1980s.
He did a tour over there.
To be woke to the plight of the Samoan people as it relates to professional wrestling maneuvers. Moving on, maybe our second favorite wrestler on the roster right now, Jake the Snake Roberts. He's in there with Scott McGee, kind of a jacked up little excitable jobber. Jake, of course, wins with the DDT because that's how Jake wins. You know, I asked Jake the Snake when I saw him back in the locker room, what does the DDT mean?
What did he say?
He said to me, it means it's over.
That's it?
That's it. That's all you know. Next match. Tony Atlas. Hercules Hernandez. You got the Atlas and you got the Hercules, two jacked up gentlemen, real steroid cases.
Yep.
Just like, you think they'd be more immobile with just like how many muscles on muscles they got, but these guys could both move pretty good.
Yeah.
What was it? Atlas wins with kind of reversing a backdrop into a sunset flip.
Yep.
And then like he gets the pin. There was a guy who kept trying to come from the third row into the first row and talk to some like black dude who was sitting ringside
I
in a chair.
Him.
And like the security guy kept on like going over and grabbing him and being like, hey, get your hands off him. Quit trying to talk to
get
him.
Get your hands off
him. He was like
a
timekeeper or something. And this guy just like three times kept coming over during this match and being like, hey, yo, buddy.
He thought he knew him.
So I missed the pinfall there because I was watching
well,
that
so
guy.
Well, so did the timekeeper.
Watching that guy get ejected for the third time.
So you know? Did the timekeeper.
Well, he might have been the reason why.
He didn't hit the ring bell.
He didn't hit the ring bell.
Last week.
All the commentators were pretty
week,
surprised at the fact that, last week
we had a timekeeper that hit the bell too early.
Erroneously hit the bell.
This week. Timekeeper doesn't hit the bell at all.
The timekeeper would have probably been a lot better off if he had one of those monitors in front of him like the commentators
That's
do.
That's true.
You see these giant monitors on their table? They look like some prop out of a 1960s
yeah,
sci-fi
they had
movie.
Like black and white zeniths on their on their table.
I understand that this is the mid-80s, but come
That's
on.
Pretty cool.
Technology had advanced past that at this point.
I'm guessing you're not putting this match in your top five. I'm just going out on a limb here.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so I just want to gripe real quick.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
They joined the match in progress.
Mm-hmm. That's grinding your gears.
They're two roided up dudes.
Sure.
And I would have liked to have seen the beginning of the match when they had a little more pep in their step.
Test of strength or something?
Well, no, I'm sure they were moving a little quicker as opposed to halfway through when they're blown up because all the steroids they're on. And they're just huffing and puffing and moving half speed.
I work out for strength.
Yeah.
Not endurance. You're supposed to put me in these little guys. I throw them around.
For the strength.
Pin them and go back. Give me another one of these big guys.
We're both strong.
Oh, man.
We're both strong.
I want to do another one of these. Okay. Big main event.
That's funny to me.
Kind of billed as a big main event.
Yeah, it's billed as one.
For some reason, standard, throwaway garbage, nothing match you're getting on this primetime wrestling all the time. We got the former tag team champions, Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik, who we've gotten a little bit of every single goddamn week on this program.
Yeah.
Like, for as boring as Volkoff is, like, I'll give Sheik his due. He's kind of fun to have around, but, man, as boring as Volkoff is, just they're featuring him like he's one of the main two or three guys in the company every week.
Sheik just, you never know what you're going to get with Sheik. He definitely wrestles to his own agenda.
Miss because he's so, you know, erratically on drugs.
Yeah, he, when he, like, lays down to take pins, he doesn't sell being hurt. He just, like, lays lifeless.
Well, for a second, he gets dizzy when he gets down on the ground, and then he forgets where he is. It takes a minute for him to readjust.
There was a really good bit where I don't know if Brunzel whips Sheik into Volkoff or if somehow Volkoff accidentally gets it.
Sheik's going in for the big boot and he sort of moves.
Yeah, and he kicks Volkoff and Volkoff's on the ground selling the kick and giving Sheik like the what the hell.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheik's like doing the, you know, looking over the top rope, I didn't mean to hit you, man.
I lose my touch.
And Brunzel comes. Did he ever have a touch to begin with? Brunzel comes up behind him and like gives him the big like slap on the back, like, oh, surprise, turn around, I'm going to punch you now.
Yeah, yeah.
And Sheik just refuses to turn around. And like Brunzel's just like patting him for like what seems like a lifetime.
He's an Iranian in America. You know how often people are trying to slap him wherever he goes?
Turn around, I got to punch you.
Water off a duck's back. Turn around, I got to punch you.
I did notice one, and I don't know, maybe I'm falling into the that's racist or it's racist category, but there was a brown guy.
You're getting infected right now, I think.
There's a,
watching all this 1980s wrestling.
There was a brown guy.
Every day you're saying more and more racist shit. I'm like, where is this coming from?
Don't paint me out like that.
Jesus Christ, he's watching too much 1980s wrestling.
There, sir, was a brown man in the audience with a very heavy black mustache, I assume to be of some kind of Middle Eastern descent.
That's racist!
Sure, okay.
Who was
given an assumption a racist would make.
A big thumbs down for the Killer Bees.
He did not like the Killer Bees.
Because I think he was one of the Sheik's people.
That makes sense to me, because also who would like the Killer Bees?
I think it was the Sheik's brother, Dwayne Sheik.
It could have been, yeah.
Yeah.
Dwayne... Yeah, the Rubber Sheik, something like that.
Dwayne the Rubber Sheik.
Yeah, there we go.
He's a good dude.
I just see showed that nice shot of that big, dumb, white idiot waving the American flag the entire match.
I don't think he was
just
an idiot,
he never
sir.
Sat down and he was waving the American flag back and forth.
The only way that could have been better is if he was just wearing sweatpants with a huge boner.
Yeah, he was in my head, like... giving the crowd the whole thumbs up.
Well, you know, he fought for your freedom.
Like, they're not just mad that he's blocking their view of the match with his giant flag that he's waving.
Yeah, what language did your teachers speak in school? English?
My teachers? Yeah.
Was it English?
All the way. American English, not that British English.
You can tell that flag waving hero thank you when you get a chance, okay?
I gotta imagine he might have been the eventual inspiration for Hacksaw Jim Duggan's character when he got to the WWF.
Vince backstage, look at this guy!
Half-tard who loves
waving
America.
Waving that flag around!
Either way, we're getting in the weeds here. Volkoff and Sheik, I think, won the match. I didn't even write
it
down.
That doesn't matter.
By the time it was over,
matter.
It's too much had happened.
Neither of those teams matter.
No, it's not the main event in my book.
No.
We'll get to what I thought the main event was.
No.
Let's start off with your first big highlight of this show.
I'm going to...
blew your hair back.
Yeah, I'm going to give you my one and my two right away because it's boom, boom, back to back.
Right there.
I'm giving you Jimmy Neidhart and Bret the Hitman Hart.
The Hart Foundation.
There wasn't a whole lot to look at on the show, I felt, but these were fine little showcases.
I got some eye candy during Fuji Vice, but
everything
in its right place.
Come on, you know, one thing at a time here. Jim Neidhart did great job doing some heel work.
Oh, I loved the way he just sold how terrified he was of how crazy George the Animal Steel is.
He didn't like his unorthodox...
No.
Wrestling stances.
Spirit fingers.
His spirit fingers.
Very
he hated that.
Spirit fingers.
You know, wasn't a great match at all, but like I said, Jim Neidhart did a really good job putting over what he had to work with there. George Steele, I'll give him a little shout out. Not very familiar with his work other than he's just really hairy and he eats turnbuckles.
Oh, yeah, that's 90% of it.
But he looked 70. Already
at this point,
for 1986.
He's very old at this point.
And but he threw nice punches, I thought.
Oh, yeah, sure. He's got a big presence to him. Like, he's a big man. He's got big mannerisms. He really fills up the ring with his personality.
He moves, like, deceptively better than you think he would.
Kind of like he gets those fingers going out and, like, waving his arms. He kind of reminds me of one of those spitter dinosaurs from Jurassic Park.
He reminded me when George was doing the Coco the Monkey thing, when he was yelling on the stairs, flailing his hands around.
That's
what I kind of thought about.
That makes perfect sense.
But either way.
One thing, since we're talking about this match.
Okay.
I appreciate a lot of what the Anvil was doing. He really put over how George was crazy and he was uncomfortable wrestling him. But what about that spot where he tried to bite his foot through his boot?
Yeah.
I was just like, yo, bro, Anvil, how strong are your teeth supposed to be, kayfabe, dude?
Really strong.
I don't remember anybody establishing that you could bite through leather goddamn wrestling boots.
He could.
That was kind of senseless.
I bet he could, though.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, Steel was selling it, so it must have hurt a little bit.
I gotta say, everybody kind of looked like a moron in that moment.
Well, yeah, but, you know, either way. But, yeah, so Jim Anvil does some good work, and then...
Who doesn't ever look like a moron, though?
Oh, the next guy here. The
next guy coming up.
The Hitman.
You know, yeah, Jim did some good work, you know, but I don't really respect him as much as a professional wrestler as I respect my own abilities.
Yeah.
I think I'm the greatest wrestler who's ever lived. You put his abilities next to my abilities and there's no comparison, you know.
He's a good guy, even though Tom Skoronski shoulder checked him after he had the stroke.
Where was that at?
At a Borders.
Oh, that's right.
They're doing a meet and greet. Tom was trying to impress Davey R. Scheister, and he says... Hey, Davey R. Scheister, watch
now,
this.
Is Tommy Shytown.
Tommy Shytown.
Right? The Chicago kid.
One of the
kid?
Best. Oh, the Chicago kid.
Okay.
Forget about it.
Yeah, this guy's a legend.
So he sees Bret the Hitman Hart just in the aisle of a Borders post stroke. And Tommy the Shytown kid turns to Davey R. Scheister and says, watch this. Walks right up to Bret, just give him the old shoulder nudge. And gives, you know, Hitman the what the fuck.
Yeah.
To which Hitman politely turns to the Chi-Town kid and says, oh, excuse me.
Oh, that's very Canadian of him.
Yeah.
Like, he's a smarmy man in general, and like a lot of that's coming through here where he's playing a heel in this match, but...
When but not if you hit
shove,
him at a Borders.
When he's backed into a corner, his Canadian politeness comes out.
Oh, it's coming right out. It's coming
meanwhile,
right out.
You got old Tommy Chi-Town over here.
Tommy Chi-Town, the Chi-Town kid.
There's definitely nothing polite about him,
No.
And I'm going to go to Al's and get a beef.
Oh, baby.
Nobody better be in my way out there on the road. I'll cut him off on the Stevenson.
Extra Jardinaires.
Oh, jeez. Dip it.
Couple
I want it
old
wet.
Styles.
Give it to me wet. Extra wet.
Give it to me wet. Put that on a shirt, pal.
Definitely.
Oh, that's boy.
Like him.
But yeah, Bret Hart wrestled. He was good at it. CV Alpha, not so much.
I gotta say, these little moves that Bret does, just like a knee drop, an elbow drop, a leg drop, all that extra snap. Every last minute, he just snaps it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, most people do these moves, and they're just like filler moves. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, the rice that comes along with the dish just to like pad the match out. But now with him, every little thing he does looks like it hurts when he's doing
presenting it.
He's out there trying to pick his opponent apart. It always shines through, and it shines through a lot, I think, with those guys who come out of Calgary. So maybe...
Oh, Calgary, yeah.
Maybe old Stu Hart, we can give the credit of that for. Just something he's drilling into their heads down there, like, make it snap.
Make it snap, make it look real brick.
I'll tell you what, Jimmy's not on drugs anymore. You should hire him back, Vince.
He's gonna wrestle with ya.
Bring in Bulldog. I got him off the drugs this time, I swear.
Working miracles.
Great at wrestling. Great at training wrestlers. You know, not so great at keeping him off drugs.
Or drilling Helen. I heard he wasn't getting it done.
Are you kidding me? There was like fucking 9 kids in that family.
Hmm?
He was a legend at drilling Helen.
Okay, that's your opinion.
Stu Hart, fucking... Your cocksmanship. I'm sorry it was disparaged. I'm going to... All the respect in the world to you, sir. You know, up there in heaven. I'm
looking,
sure he's still...
Looking for good wrestling progeny.
Sure still just drilling hillbilly Canadian women.
Oh, boy.
All day long in heaven.
Yeah, well, there's nothing else that needs to be said there. So that's my one and two.
Okay. My number one, you know, kind of goes all throughout these first couple matches. And just every bumper segment before and after these matches. And, it's just how often and how much they keep putting over the fact that they're in the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. And this is a big deal. because this is a the legendary Joe. Arena. It's the Joe.
They just tore it down, didn't
it's
they?
It's a big deal. Yeah, I believe so. You know, a little piece of history gone, but yep. That's a kind of what I appreciated about this, is that back in these days, you get all these old arenas, and they each had their own, like, little personality. Like, yeah. If you watch enough of this shit, you could tell where they are just based on looking out. Like,
yeah.
These days, all these goddamn buildings look cookie exactly cutter. The same. You know, digital screen-covered monstrosities, mm-hmm. fucking all these, like, you know, executive fucking whatever booths everywhere.
Oh god,
kind of just anywhere you go in public these days looks like you're on the set of Deal or No Deal.
Make me sick.
Flat panels and flashing graphics everywhere. So it was great being in the Joe and just like being like, look at that dirty old rancid place. Yeah. I think I just saw a rat run across the canvas. Like, there's history here, there's personality.
Like, it looked awful then, and they were still doing shows there.
That was a long time ago.
Last year. Probably earlier this year.
I imagine it's just some sort of Thunderdome up until they knocked it down. The last decade or so is probably just horrific, horrific gladiatorial battles going on in there. And people welding spikes to A-team vans and then just crashing them into each other.
That sounds fun.
Hitting each other with clubs.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it does sound like a lot of fun.
I'd watch that.
It's a shame we didn't go there more. Yeah. We should start hanging out in Detroit. Probably not, you know.
Home of RoboCop.
I was just kidding, Tommy Chi-Town. You know, spent the whole weekend up in Milwaukee at a wedding, but I was thinking about Chicago the whole time, Tom.
Damn, Milwaukee's like to call it Chicago North.
Yeah, you know, they got that river up there, but we got like Dull River, you know what I'm saying?
The north side.
On the shitty end of the lake.
Yeah, the shitty end of the lake.
Everybody's talking about rivers and lakes.
Rivers and lakes.
Yeah, you know, the two stripes on the Chicago flag, they represent our rivers and our lakes, the most beautiful in the world.
I didn't know that.
The Bears.
Float down, you take that water taxi to Chinatown.
Oh, yeah.
You just keep going south, Pat. You don't want to stop there. You want to get yourself a Chicago-style hot dog.
Oh,
you don't
want
any of that Chinese crap.
No, you got a Maxwell's right there.
You'd be shitting yourself for a week.
No, you got a Maxwell's.
I bet Tom eats at least like two meals a day at Maxwell Street.
How many times do you think he and Colt Cabana just run into each other and just give each other like uneasy stares like about who's more Chicago?
I bet Colt does a lot of begging off.
Yeah, they don't even know who each other are, but they can't stand each other.
Yeah, too. I mean, I know that Tom, the Chicago kid, celebrates all neighborhoods.
True.
You know, the whole entirety of the city. But he's not spending too much time over there on the west side, old Hipsterville with Colt Cabana.
Or that north side.
Yeah, he's too busy down there with the real people.
Oh, the blue collar
watching
folk.
The White
ham and
Sox.
Eggers. The ham and eggers.
Watching the White Sox in the back of the yard.
The White Sox.
That's my number one.
What, Tom Skowronski?
Yeah, Tom Skowronski.
That's your number one.
Tommy Chi-Town.
Yeah.
Driving up and down Lakeshore Drive. Giving everybody winks and nods, the true
Edens.
Legend of the town. My number two is Fuji Vice.
Fuji Vice.
Yeah, they gave us...
Real quick, before we get to Fuji Vice.
Fuji Vice.
We should mention...
Played it in its entirety.
There's a rare miss in the show.
Oh, okay.
There should have been a thumbs up or a star or whatever for the Mean Gene and Jake the Snake Robert interview.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
But, unfortunately, that was the most sober I've ever heard Jake the Snake Roberts.
Not my favorite Jake interview.
Yeah. He was just sober.
Yeah, I think mostly they were just trying to, like, show the snake off the most and be like, oh, he's got a snake, it's scary.
A rare miss.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to the real...
Fuji Vice.
The real...
I don't know.
...deal here.
What
everybody
were doing
was...
here.
It was
a series of weird short films starring Mr. Fuji and Don Morocco.
Because who doesn't want to see that?
I can tell you one person, Gorilla Monsoon, didn't seem to be too pleased to have to sit through it on the show.
The Brain loved it.
The Brain, like a champ, company man, putting us over. So
He's got a bit that I really like where he asks them to just play something over again.
Yeah, play it again.
That's a good bit.
Like, we got a format on the bit. Show, Brain. Like, you can't just play things over.
Like, they're just hanging out. Whatever you want there, Bob.
So what is Fuji Vice? Something so
Fuji
bad, people
Vice.
Are still talking about it. Of course, Miami Vice was huge at the time, and Vince McMahon, ever the arbiter of what's popular in the culture.
And what's funny.
Tastemaker, Vince McMahon, he's like, we're doing a Miami Vice. We're going to do it, but it's going to be better. It's going to be better than what they're doing.
It's going to be funny.
It's going to have a little bit of some meta wit to it.
Sex appeal.
So yeah, Fuji Vice is amateur actors, washed out.
Oh, they seem
video
pretty professional
great cinematography, wind obscured dialogue outside that was not redone over
plenty
with any ADR.
That. Plenty
so
of that.
You could barely hear what any of this poorly scripted bullshit was. As poorly scripted as it was, it came out even worse when Fuji is trying to wrap his oriental mind around the English language. And that doesn't translate well to the page. You got Don Morocco, who's just a caveman. They've dressed up as a modern man, trying to pass him off as a real human.
He was doing real well.
He's not so great at reading either.
That first scene, the entire scene, is just Fuji and Morocco staring dead into the camera as the other quote-unquote actors try to act like you would in a television show.
I imagine they were staring right past the camera, where Kevin Dunn was like shaking a little stuffed animal to keep their attention.
So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you would an infant at the Sears Portrait Studio.
But I mean, they're just dead on staring while all the other actors are like, we're doing real
and
television here.
They're wearing sunglasses, and you can tell that they're staring like right into the camera.
And then that second scene, anytime Morocco has to speak, he looks to his left to get his lines and then says them. Oh, that was great stuff.
Line.
So the big setup is, you know, they're vice cops that clearly aren't on the level, as it turns out.
Oh, yeah, they tried to steal a quarter of a million from the old police station there.
Because they're good. Body, you know, shows up on shore. Old girl's like, oh, no, that's my, she's white as can be, and she's like, that's my brother Juan, and like the lieutenant's like, something doesn't seem right about that.
That's racist!
But Morocco and Fuji are like, don't worry, lieutenant, like, we got this shit. So they're questioning the girl at the bar.
Hey, beat cop, like, why don't you go walk your beat and like let the detectives here handle it.
So we're going to go check some stuff out because the Seahawks.
Why don't you wear a Columbo jacket out on the beach? We're in Miami. It's
we're in Miami,
95
yuts.
Degrees.
So the Seahawks been killing people because he's got that big cocaine business going.
Seahawk selling his stupid cocaine.
So they're trying to track down the Seahawk, but they're also trying to steal $250,000. Morocco's also trying to bang this blonde woman, his brother.
It's because this wasn't just a 2-minute skit.
No.
This goes on for a good 10 minutes.
Was it like 10 minutes? I couldn't tell.
It's like 10 minutes.
The one thing I did like was after the little bar scene where Morocco fails to bang the blonde.
Hey, she said that once he solves the case,
he could hit it. Yeah.
All his.
Yeah.
And then he was very pleased with that, rightly so.
Yeah, serve it up wet.
The Bears!
So they decide they need to hit the
street. I like it wet.
I like it wet. They hit the streets to talk to some of their peoples. And we get a great little montage of straight street people.
Gotta have a montage.
Did you notice?
Oh, yeah.
They were showing nothing but street people.
Well, it's Miami.
But it was good to see.
All you get is retirees, Cuban
refugees,
immigrants, and street people.
And street
That's
people.
The three kind of people who live in Florida.
But, yeah, the whole thing culminates. They go to the boat. They figured out where the Seahawk is, and they're like, oh, we're going to haul him in and pretend that the money got lost in a scuffle and steal it, and we're going to be rich heroes. Mm. Then they get double-crossed by the blonde. She turns out to be the Seahawk.
She was the killer. She was the Seahawk.
There's a brunette there as well that's not explained.
This is my whole point. This blonde, this brunette, who apparently was, you know, her cohort.
Yeah.
Both frumpy women in their mid-30s. Why did it take wrestling so long to figure out how to get attractive women for these throwaway roles? For decades and decades and decades, every woman who showed up to do anything on wrestling was frumpy and in her mid-30s. These chicks are wearing straight one pieces. Like, how hard is it go to, like, you know, go to the shoddy modeling agency in whatever city you're filming in?
And the brunette's got
a couple
like straight
of aspiring young models a couple $100. Like, you saw it in the 90s when they had Godfather bringing out like 12 hoes every fucking episode.
Oh, and there was
Raw,
like a waiting list to get on that.
Sure. Hot young girls are a dime a dozen, but like from the 50s through like the late 80s, still into the early 90s, wrestling cannot figure out how to get attractive young women
and
on
like,
their TV.
This is like 86.
Not for the life of them.
This is 86. Wrestling's at like an all-time peak in popularity.
Oh, yeah,
like
sure.
They're over huge. Like, so my big line of the week that I wrote down takes place in this sweet little Fuji Vice skit. Old brunette's talking about $250,000 can buy you a cocaine for your nose and whatever. To which Fuji says something.
The 80s figured out.
Fuji says something in broken English.
Oh, yeah.
The brunette says,
I couldn't make out a word he said the whole time.
The brunette answers back with, what's his deal? To which Morocco says, oh, don't worry about him. He's a good guy. He's from out of town. I want to get him a little something to chase away his blues.
His blues.
What does that mean?
Oh, I don't know. He's probably trying to line Fuji up with a little female action.
What was Fuji upset about?
Well, you know, a lot of things. I don't know. His
hope he's okay.
Managing career has gotten to the point where he's following around Don Morocco making goddamn parody films.
Oh, man.
Used to be a big-time tag team champion. Not yet to ease into that cushy manager of Demolition spot. Things probably weren't looking good for Fuji right here. Throw the man a bone.
But yeah, but that was my number three, and that was your number two.
Yeah, so let's go into my number three.
Which is my number four, I'm guessing.
Back to Iron Mike Sharp.
Here we go.
Woo.
Favorite wrestler on the roster.
Yeah.
Back
now,
to
this is
everything that I love.
This is not for Corporal Kirshner at all. This is all for Iron Mike Sharp.
Okay, yeah, not much personality there, but Iron Mike Sharp, all the personality in the world.
He's the man.
Back to doing his loud hollering whenever he's in a submission hold.
No,
I love more than that loud hollering.
Oh, did you catch one of the greatest fan moments of the night?
I absolutely did, which is what I was going to go into next.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
You know, Iron Mike Sharp, like a classic heel, keeps powdering out, keeps running away, keeps begging off whenever he's on the outside. Ooh, that crowd, Mike, is picking up a lot of audio.
Yeah.
Some man, some gentleman.
Coolest guy in the room.
Coolest guy in the room's throwing him lines from paper towel commercials.
Yeah.
Every time he comes by, this man's yelling, wimpy, wimpy, wimpy.
Yeah.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy.
I wish we had watched this before Ring of Honor, so we could have been just trying to get that chant over last night.
Well, we got
wimpy, wimpy, wimpy.
Trying to get back over. In addition to a wimpy, wimpy, wimpy chant, how about we wouldn't have anything to chant that at because nobody takes powders anymore. Nobody's begging off. Anytime a guy was in trouble last night, we were begging these guys to roll out of the ring and get themselves together.
Yeah.
They were looking at us like we were morons.
Take a minute.
Are you kidding me? We've only got 12 minutes for this match, and I got to get all my spots in, man. Like, I still got four or five more flips to do. I can't waste any time, like, you know,
Mike Sharp,
trying to get myself over as a character.
Mike Sharp not only takes powders, he finds a way to one-up his powders every week.
Last time we saw him, he was 10 rows up in the crowd.
10 rows up. What's he do this time around? How do you
top
that?
This time he's just walking up the tunnel acting like he's going to go to the back and quit the entire match.
He makes it all the way into the tunnel.
Yeah, he leaves.
That's dedication.
Not doing his job. Should be counting him out this whole time.
Oh, absolutely.
But, I guess everybody assumed he must have been bluffing. And he was.
I like how they give him the benefit of the doubt.
He ended up being a bluffer.
He'll come back. We don't need to count.
This is all great because this is all leading to something, too, because he's begging off. He's being cowardly. And what he's doing is he's trying to make his opponent overconfident.
Yep.
And that's what happens. Corporal Kirshner tries to throw one too many drop kicks. He's like, thinks he's got his number, this man, pronouns pal. He thinks he's got Mike Sharp's number, so he keeps throwing him the same dropkick combination to just take him out. You know, stick to what works. This guy's a coward. No, he was smart. He was suckering you in. He was ready for that dropkick. He countered it, and that's when he was able to take over and start taking over this match.
Yep.
He's ham and eggers in the crowd.
Wily veteran.
These real humanoids. They're on this guy's case. They think he's wimpy, wimpy, wimpy. I mean, you know, maybe he's
wimpy,
just a
wimpy,
smarty,
wimpy.
Smarty, smarty. He's got some strategies here. He's a better wrestler than you. He's Canada's premier athlete, and you know, these idiots in the crowd would probably have something going for them. They wouldn't just have to be in the crowd. They'd be out there. Spotlight would be on them.
That's right.
Where's their spotlight? Nowhere. Who cares?
Nowhere.
Nobody.
They're garbage. You're all garbage.
Okay, how many have we done? You've already done three, right?
Yeah.
We're doing all
What's
that
your
together?
Four? What's your four?
Huh,
let's go right
that
to
big
it.
Dream Team interview with Gene Okerlund.
There's some good moments in there.
Your man, Jimmy Valiant's brother, Johnny Valiant, is managing
Not
the Dream
cool.
Team. It's pretty cool, man. This guy sounds
only
like Tony
says,
Clifton when
only
he's doing
he
interviews.
Only because he says pal.
Hey, pal.
Hey, pal.
Ah, there's some pal, pally, pal.
Sounds a little bit Tony Clifton. He sounds a little bit Tommy Shytown.
That's true.
Bah, whatever you do, he's yelling. He's yelling everything he did, though.
Pal, the Bears.
Voice is ridiculous. His delivery's ridiculous. He's wearing sunglasses.
And a Rangers jersey. And
a
Texas Rangers. Oh, yeah, t-shirt.
Yeah, I don't know. He's like, wear like a cool leather jacket or something if you're trying to get over like a sunglasses indoors look.
It's like he was walking backstage and somebody just grabbed him and were like, yo, Johnny, you got a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, you didn't have to
roll it.
Put on a costume or anything.
Yeah, no, roll it.
He was dressed like Adam Sandler dresses to act in his movies, quite
absolutely.
Frankly. I'm sure if they would have panned out, like, he would have been wearing cargo shorts.
Oh, much like a Sandler.
Pair of flip-flops. Yeah, I liked this interview, mostly because of his weird yelling. Also...
Yeah, it was the most 80s moment of the night.
Yeah, so much hollering. I like Beefcake's weird, like, body language, where he just kind of effeminately had his arms crossed a little
bit.
He kind of just looked like... I don't know, like a heroin addict.
Yeah.
Just like sort of like vaguely goth, vaguely bisexual.
Yeah.
Like but a, not dressed like that, dressed like a Chippendales
like
dancer.
Like Jared Leto in Fight Club.
He just really didn't have his whole, you know, acting with his body thing, projecting a character thing down. Once he started that strutting and cutting later on in his career, he could concentrate on the strutting and cutting and he was fine.
But he was angry.
Greg the Hammer Valentine.
But you forgot, Barbara was angry that they had to do the interview.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to go work out instead.
He wants to lift weights.
Yeah.
He's a beefcake, this man.
That's pretty great. It's pretty great.
Valentine, I'm just like, you had him on commentary a couple weeks ago. We got him talking here, and I'm really liking what I'm hearing out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, he's reminding me of a real gruff, grizzled Robert Mitchum type character.
Yep.
I really liked that he kept referring to Brutus Beefcake as the Beefer.
The Beefer, thank you. I wrote it down too.
Good little nickname.
Me and the Beefer.
I really thought this guy was just a boring nobody when I was a kid.
Would a boring nobody quote Bob Seger's Against the Wind?
Here we go. Grizzled old man throws a Bob Seger
give
quote
it to me.
Into a goddamn... You're the one that writes down all the quotes. What do you got? Which song did he go into directly?
Against the Wind.
Yeah, because they're running Against the Wind.
The
Dream Team has been running against the in this feud with the British Bulldogs. So yeah, I was completely wrong, I think, when I was a kid. I'm beginning to realize that Greg the Hammer Valentine's awesome. You just have to be like a grizzled old man to appreciate him.
My girlfriend's cousin partied at his house because he was friends with the Hammer's daughter.
You gotta be kidding me.
No.
That's very impressive.
So we could probably make our way to the Hammer's house.
How old's his daughter?
Rich is like 40,
Rich
so.
Is like 40. But if she's a couple years younger, that's dating age.
Yeah.
I would try to get with Greg the Hammer Valentine's
daughter. Oh, and sure. I assume she's got to look just like him. Like same hair and everything.
If they call her the Hammer too, like sign me up double.
Baby.
I am in.
Baby.
So yeah, that was my number four. Let's go into our big time
to
number
our
fives.
Shared number five.
Or fine.
It's
gotta
we're
going to share this one too.
What else is there to talk about?
I don't know. We maybe need to get like a third host whose opinions aren't so on point so we can argue with them more.
Or they got to present a better product. One of the two.
Yeah, maybe we get like Tommy Shytown in here. I don't know. He likes weird stuff.
We wouldn't be able to get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, we'd be eating that microphone.
Slobber. Mm-hmm.
I just hear Jardinera dropping all over the microphone.
It's a spicy, spicy Jardinera.
Hey, I brought you guys a deep dish, Tom. You don't really want to get a bunch of dairy going before you're going to, you know, record audio.
You already ate half of it.
I just have 2 or 3 slices apiece.
2 or 3. It's got the sausage patty.
Hi, Bears.
Oh, I love it. Got to have that patty.
You got to.
Whole patty of sausage.
Just a whole goddamn patty of
What's
sausage.
What's going on in Chicago?
Obesity.
So our number five is that Jake the Snake Roberts, Scotty McGee match,
Scotty
right?
Scotty McGee.
Yeah, this match kicked ass, dude.
Yeah, it was just good wrestling.
Not only do you have Jake the Snake Roberts, who's just, you know, premier, and at the time, you know, still, like you said earlier, seemed to be halfway sober during that, interview, and here he's just really moving. He's really athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And Scotty McGee, man, this guy's turning it up like twice as hot as Jake the Snake is. This
he looked legit.
Hitting the ropes.
He looked like the real deal.
Harder than anybody this side of Naruki Doi.
Ooh.
That's a little fast guy. I haven't seen him in a few years. Is he still wrestling? Either way,
I don't know.
This guy hitting the ropes hard. This guy's wrestling fast. This guy is really trying to make the most of his minutes here. Both these guys are hitting the ropes hard. Jake's doing it too, but it's different because this guy's got like tiny little short guy legs, so he's got to take like 12 steps to get across the ring, and Jake just takes like 3 gazelle like
it's amazing
long leg strides, and he's all the way across that 20-foot ring. Like
he's just you don't realize how big he is until he starts moving around in there.
It was at this point that I noticed that there was a couple in the front row wearing matching Argyle sweaters. It's like a real lame middle-aged couple. His was white and red. Hers was white and blue.
That sounds nice.
It wasn't nice. Like, these two needed to get an ass beating. Like, they looked lame. Who goes to a wrestling show wearing matching Argyle sweaters? Maybe if you got, like, your tag team partner with you or something, you dress the same.
Couple of Detroit dorks.
Yeah, you don't dress the same as your wife. Like, no. Oh, geez.
No.
Take your nuts out of her purse and put them back into your Argyle underwear,
unless
sir.
You're both wearing polka dot.
I mean, this is something I could see Davey R. Scheister, like, having pulled on him. Like, his wife, the...
He's not getting his wife at a wrestling
Russian
show.
Russian ice queen starts trying to... He's definitely not at a wrestling show. No. I mean, she'd probably be taking him to some sort of charity gala or something, demanding that they wear matching outfits.
Yeah.
It would be something like an Argyle sweater, too. And the way that guy spends money, he's always projecting that high-class image.
Yeah.
Oh, these people, I don't understand it. You're watching Jake the Snake Roberts. He's pulling out that big snake.
Ooh.
You're wearing a sweater.
Damien...
But, McGee, too. He's impressing me with his athleticism. He's impressing me.
He looked good.
After the match, he eats the DDT. You know, standard thing. Jake throws a snake on him. Most people just lay there and the snake sort of lays on
them. No, he sells
the
shit out of it.
Yeah, not only does he, like, you know, bleed out of his mouth and, like, wrap the snake around his neck and
to make it look like
kick his legs so it looks like he's being strangled. Yeah. Like, yeah, just like that's two things that no one else I've ever seen do during the snake spot, just to put it over huge. Like, this guy's super athletic. He's bumping his ass off. He's trying to put over this snake as being a killer. Hope to see this guy get some more work, because he looks like he's out there just trying to prove himself, trying to get some TV time. Give this man some TV time.
I think we might have saw him on that first week of primetime. I'd have to go back and check our notes.
I recognize the name, but and I think that we did, but I don't remember being as impressed with him during that match as
he had a little,
was for this one.
He had a little motor on him.
Not so
he
impressed by these commentators. Like, these are not our usual WWF commentators we're getting. Their banter's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful.
That one guy tried to spit out that line, like, oh, I think maybe Jake Snake gives him voodoo cult powers.
He's got voodoo
the
cult.
The power of the serpentine. Apparently this other guy has not taken any Del Close improv classes, because he does not give him the yes and. He's just like, sure, whatever.
Whatever, weirdo.
I don't think that's something we're supposed to be going with right now.
Back to wrestling.
It's going to be like another good 10 years or so before they start coming up with characters who get voodoo powers from things.
He was ahead of his time. That's all right.
And Jake hits that big DDT. They don't even know to call out the goddamn DDT.
No.
I think it's some kind of neck breaker is what the idiot says.
Some kind of neck breaker.
First off, no, it's not.
It's not.
Second off, it's the DDT, the greatest move in wrestling history.
Yeah.
Looks nothing like a neckbreaker. Look down your card, man. Like, know what these people's finishes are before you're calling their matches for television. Christ.
Yeah, that was an egregious
You get a
moment.
Lot of, like, complaining about how overly scripted and overly produced these guys are these days, but Jesus Christ, there's a happy medium. Like, back then, they must have been getting no direction.
Just go out there and call what you see.
Yeah. So that's our five. We're not going to say anything more about that Sheik and Volkov match. We've said enough about those gentlemen.
My MVP of the night?
It's a week off. Who's that?
Sunset Flip.
Just the move, the Sunset Flip?
It was in every match.
It was very effective.
It was in every match tonight.
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes twice.
So, yeah, there we go. This Night of the Sunset Flip.
Yep.
Sounds like a hard-boiled detective novel. I kind of like Detective Greg Valentine and the Night of the Sunset Flip.
Ooh, write it.
Yeah, I would read that.
Write that.
Got a spec script on its way.
Write it.
What else is on its way after we do a couple commercials here?
Not a one.
Nope.
Not a two.
No, a two wouldn't be enough.
Not a four. That's too much.
Well, that's ridiculous. It's like when you're shaving, you don't get that like that one with the four blades. That's trying too hard.
It's going to be the Gillette Mach 3 Presents.
Oh, nice.
The three count.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
You've come so far, and we know how to make the most of who you are. Where the race is run, you're the champion. Gillette.
The Gillette Atra Plus system with the Lubra Smooth Strip for the best a man can get.
Yes, kids, you too can own one of the big Halloween three. That's right, three horrific masks to choose from. They're fun, they're frightening, and they glow in the dark.
It's that magical time of the evening. Our signature piece, the piece we created all on our own. I'm talking about that three count, son.
Our piece de resistance, which is
I don't
French
speak foreign, pal.
For the three count.
It's our topical topic tonight,
yeah, so
for that
we
three
went
count.
To that Ring of Honor New Japan Pro Wrestling Global Wars show, and we had
Global
a lot
Wars.
Of complaints. A lot of complaints in general. We were saying earlier, too much comedy. Every match except for one was just full of comedy spots. They're not taking anything seriously. Nobody out there is looking mean, looking like they're there to fight, looking like they're there to hurt anybody. We are, of course, as you know, the world's foremost experts in grudge. How much grudge were you detecting last night when we were at that wrestling show, buddy?
About that, we got our start in grudge from a lot of early Ring of Honor shows.
Oh, they used to be great at grudge.
That's a lot of where we learned.
2003 to 2007, those shows, you know.
Real grudge. Real grudge.
Like a nice mix between sort of like late 80s Jim Crockett stuff and like early 90s All Japan. Just like a lot of it about like wrestling. Titles are important. Mm-hmm. The rules are important. Mm-hmm. But then like, you know, somebody would cross somebody and you'd get a big bloody grudge.
There was always
match.
A line to cross. Mm-hmm. And that's where your grudge came into play, pal.
Oh, yeah. You got to, you know, just like Jimmy Jacobs getting bloodbaths under people that he's busted
the
open.
Spike?
Yeah, you
the
got
spike?
Like
Jimmy
homicide
Rape's spike?
Pouring Drano down Colt Cabana's throat and then him puking up Drano everywhere. Like you got Special K like taking the Baldi's teenage daughters out raving and drugging them up. And then those guys just got to make each other bleed everywhere.
That's a really weird thing.
It was a fun storyline.
But, yeah, no grudge last
no,
night.
No, these
not
just...
Not a whiff.
Yucking it up and get
a
laugh.
Not a scent.
Maybe like
not
a little
hint.
Bit in that first segment where Dalton Castle came back to get his revenge
Ooh,
on Cody Rhodes.
He showed a little.
Seems like he's like maybe trying to brew up a little bit of grudge, but it's
a
if
little
th- there's going to be grudge eventually, which, quite frankly, I'm not sure of now, seeing as what's happened to this promotion.
I don't think they could even make it there, because knowing Dalton Castle, the two of them are going to get in the ring and have like some kind of prance off.
I could see that happening. Maybe
grudge
the first rumblings of grudge,
dead.
Though. But yeah, everyone on the goddamn just card has the same look.
Mm-hmm.
Just a clean-cut white guy, small clean-cut white guy.
Yep.
They've all got the exact same moveset. They're all just doing kicks and springboard flips. Nothing but kicks and springboard flips. There's really not much we could get behind. It was kind of disheartening as much as I used to enjoy
Selling
their
merch.
Product.
It's all they cared about.
And now they've sort of just rebranded as this goofy comedy promotion. But you know, maybe we can help them out, give them a little bit of advice. You got to get some 1980s back into your product here. You got to get some of this old school throwback shit back layered in there so it doesn't look like such a goddamn farce.
So we, both, we kept our eyes peeled the
tried
entire
to
show.
Pick out our three most 80s moments of the night, the things that would have seemed at home maybe in 80s wrestling, or maybe things that could be expanded upon to get some more grudge, some more just grounded reality, some more anger, some more viciousness, some more professional goddamn wrestling.
Would
into
be
this
nice.
Circus show full of clowns and acrobats they've turned this goddamn shit into. So let's get right into it.
They had a guy turning into a cat last night in between doing flips. He was turning into a cat in between during
paws,
flips.
Doing scratches.
Get out of here.
No, I don't want none of that.
Not in my wrestling America.
What's your number three?
My number three. It wasn't a moment as much as it was a person.
Okay.
Beer City Bruiser.
Beer City Bruiser is his name. I had written down Brawler. I was wrong. I'm glad you corrected me before
Beer
I even
City
said
Bruiser.
That because that gentleman was also my number three.
Yeah, he was the 80s.
Oh, for sure.
I commented to you
I
at
wrote
the
down
show.
Brawler just because I confused him with the Brooklyn Brawler a little bit in my head. That's what a great just like
he
comes, big card 80s guy he would have been.
He comes to the ring chomping on one of those like half exploded cigars.
Looks like one of those cartoon cigars that exploded.
He's got a pony keg under his arm that he carries because he's the Beer City Bruiser.
From Milwaukee.
Props are always good.
As I spent the weekend at a wedding in Milwaukee, I can attest that a lot of men look like this in Milwaukee. There's a lot of beer drinking going on in Milwaukee. This is a guy that the crowd can relate to. Middle America, not so into Hillary Clinton maybe, but Beer City Bruiser, like, this guy. I could see him taking off.
He had what it takes to be a Super Bowl player.
Big fat guy is the thing. He's a big slobby big fat
fall,
guy.
Yeah, he's balding, but he's balding? He didn't go with the shaved head look. He no. just let the bald thing go.
Yeah, because he's the not receding gonna groom hairline. Himself.
No,
because he's a big slobby,
he's
gross
too
weirdo.
Busy drinking beers and having a good time.
He's not doing.
And
any
he's not a good guy. Don't let his
flying shit.
Yeah, don't let his big size make you think. Oh, he's a beer drinking good time guy. No. No, he hates you.
Mm-hmm.
He hates that you're there. He's doing it all right. I said to you last night, the only thing he was missing to get his look over was a splotch.
Oh, yeah. You just get one of those. Just like, you get a makeup girl and paint one of those dusty splotches on the side and be big shit.
Authenticity.
But yeah, this guy wrestles like he's a big fat guy because he is a big fat guy. He's not like impressing you with how big he can move for a big man. No, he's just using his tubby lard butt to squash people. Yeah. The only, like, remotely high-flying shit he's doing is just big, like, belly flops onto dudes trying to smush them with his big fat belly.
He did a moonsault off the apron at one point because he was...
I don't think that's physically possible.
But it was more of a fall. It was more of a New Jack fall than a moonsault.
Fat guy flopping around. He could, you know, I think he could connect as a good guy, too.
Yeah.
If he wanted to, like, this is...
Oh, you put some cowboy boots on him?
Yeah, you just have him lean more into that beer-drinking thing. Like, this guy looks like me, he drinks beer like me. And just have him do some more, like, wild brawling. And then, like, people would have plenty of reason to cheer for him. Now, he was tag-teaming with Silas Young.
He's got a pretty good 80s look about him.
I like
him.
His look. He's got a nice Rick Rude mustache. He looks like a grizzled dad, but he's still rocking that, like, long pro wrestler ponytail. I think, like, when he changed his gimmick to the real man's man, he should have just, like, got a nice short dad haircut.
Yeah.
He's still doing too many, like, pretty, like, flying shit and, like, intricate reversal sequences. Like, if you're the real man's man, why aren't you, like, doing more eye gouges?
Yeah, if you're gonna do a flip, let's
make
it
shots to the mush with your fist.
If you're gonna do a flip, let's make it a sunset flip.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna do some moves, how about a couple atomics?
Old school atomic drops, just like boom, right on their butt. That'd be nice. Some eye scratches. I think
Bruiser could really
thinking about going like, oh, tag team. I like these guys.
I debated too,
but
no.
I'm just giving it to the Bruiser.
He was the all-star.
Silas has still got a little more character work to do before he's got this character over. But what he's doing right now, big improvement over just like him being another generic flippy white guy like he was for so many years around here in these Midwest Indies.
Absolutely.
Glad to see he at least has some sort of character going on now. All right, let's go on to number two.
Number two, I have...
Numero doso.
The use of props for entrances.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting. I'm trying to think back.
You had...
I know Yoshihashi carries around that weird anime stick or whatever.
You got, Kushida? The time splitter?
Yeah.
He's got
the... little guy who,
He had the hoverboard with him.
Kushida.
Kushida. You have the ticking time bomb.
Oh.
And his...
Romu Takahashi?
His stuffed cat, Carl.
Yeah, okay.
Or, no, Daryl.
Daryl, yes, you're
Daryl
right
the cat.
That.
His stuffed cat.
Yeah, I'm fine with his weird, like, I like him. He's got a weird, like, sort of unique energy to him, like a macho man, and maybe a little bit, like, a unique personality. We're like, oh, this guy's off. Like, I don't mind him having this cat out that he's talking to.
Yeah.
When you got his opponent taking the cat out and, like, wrestling it and doing spots to it, though.
Well, then
to, like,
we cross the boundary.
So,
the
crowd can yuck it up and be like, oh, that's... It's, like, a lot of the just, like... internet random humor. Like, that's so random. Like, that's so random.
That's so random.
Like, what year is it now when just like random internet humor is still funny? Like, is this 1999? Is this 2000? Because
2017. Punch a guy in the
When was Homestar Runner? When were 12-year-old kids laughing at that? Because that's still what these fucking dorks are laughing at.
It's
still that same just so random humor. The laziest humor there is.
It really is.
I hate it, but I don't hate bringing out objects.
Coming out with props. You had Marty Scurll with a mask and an umbrella.
Yeah, he does it right. Like, they're selling those umbrellas for $40 a pop.
$40?
They're screen printing a generic umbrella, and then they're selling them to these people who are just like buying them. Like, where are you going to take this Bullet Club umbrella?
You are going to say virgins.
Yeah, this is propped up in the corner of your bedroom for the rest of your life. Like, what are you buying this for? $40.
$40.
That's how you know that bringing bringing a prop out to the ring with you is a good idea.
Yeah, so, yeah, I miss those days. I don't think you're getting enough of it anymore.
You don't even got to get creative. Just somebody start bringing out a 2x4 again.
Yeah, 2x4s.
Do that 2x4 gimmick.
Big pair of scissors for cutting hair, a chain because you're a junkyard dog.
We saw Hercules Hernandez earlier. He used to bring out that big chain and swing it around before the match. Like,
you can't do that anymore because of liability issues.
I'm surprised that didn't kill anybody back then.
That you know of.
Seemed very dangerous.
I'm sure they covered it
up. I need a little danger in my wrestling, though.
So, yeah, props. I like props. I give props to props.
That's fun. My number two, little throwback to the fashion plates of the 1980s. I just like the Young Bucks gear.
Ooh.
I like how the Young Bucks present themselves.
Ooh.
You know, they just always have the loudest, most busiest patterns.
Yeah.
Of their tights ever. They got tassels hanging off of their boots.
Tassels are always good.
Used to just be a standard thing. Like, if you're a wrestler, what am I going to do to stand out? I'm either going face paint or I'm going tassels.
What's
going to
make these drop kicks pop?
Yeah, if I'm a legend, I'm doing face paint and tassels.
Well, duh.
That's how you just really make yourself last down through the ages and get bullshit like breast cancer awareness programs named after you, even though you were kind of just like a hateful human being making rude, controversial comments everywhere.
How dare you? He had the warriors floating through his veins.
Ultimate Warrior had a lot of warriors floating through his veins.
And a lot of demons floating through his closet.
Warriors were a fancy word for homophobia.
Oh.
He would have got along great with that flushed-faced gentleman who yelled the F word really loud. And not the fuck word either. No.
We're fine with the fuck word. We're
fine with the fuck word. Young Bucks gear. Yeah. Tassels.
Yeah, that's always on point.
One bro has just got big, stupid pork chop sideburns.
Oh, the stupidest.
Nice throwback. Just looks dumb. The other one's just...
Those aren't pork chop. Those are mutton chop.
Got a bandana tied as a headband. Like, he looks extra douchey that way. Like, these guys are tapping into the late 80s fashion to just make themselves corny goofballs. And I like their corny goofball style, even though so many people have bought it at this point that, you know, it used to be the Young Bucks gimmick to do too many stupid flips and to make everything ridiculous. And now everybody's just the entire
indie world is doing that.
Yeah, they're all doing the Young Bucks gimmick now. They're all just doing, like, trying to look like corny goofballs who do too many flips. You can't all have the Young Bucks gimmick.
No.
You got to have different gimmicks, guys.
Yeah.
Come up with something else.
Something else, please.
Not you, Young Bucks, though. You keep doing what you're doing.
You're doing a good job.
We can move on now to the big number one. This is
number one.
Huge here.
Numero uno.
What was the most 80s thing you saw when we were crammed into that sweatbox? It was pretty cold in there.
It was pretty cold.
Yeah. Pretty chilly. Odium.
I think it was like an ice arena.
Yeah, come on. What month do you think it is? Turn down the AC a little bit.
The most 80s thing I saw last night.
I can't wait to hear about it.
Was the Kiss Cody's ring gimmick.
Oh, I like that gimmick. Yeah.
That's a great 80s bit where you come out wearing a nice piece of gold somewhere on your body.
Mm-hmm.
You demand people pay attention to it. You demand people pay respect to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you pull some schlub out of the audience to kiss it. Let them know.
Throwback to Rick Rude pulling ladies out of the audience to kiss him.
You let them know you're here. And they're all the way down
nice
there.
Throwback to the Million Dollar Man pulling people out of the audience and saying he's going to give them money if they humiliate themselves in some way.
But the only problem with the gimmick was everybody's got to get their own stupid agenda over to sell a couple fucking t-shirts.
So now you've got people out here being like, well, the fans, too, want
to
be part of
the
shit.
Fans.
So they've
got
all their, like,
Cody too.
I want to kiss the ring signs and shit, and they're begging to kiss the ring.
He's got the greatest natural heel bit right there. But instead, like, he's got to let you know he's just one of the guys having a great time.
Wink,
so
wink.
You should like him. We're having fun together.
Yeah.
Fuck having fun with those rubes.
No.
You let them know you're better than them. You're a fucking Rhodes.
It's so confused right now. The Bullet Club's still pretty heel in Japan, but, like,
you're a Rhodes, man.
Not pushing it anymore. In America, they just are default to faces because these people on the internet think they're buddies with these guys. They comment on their YouTube videos.
Yeah.
They talk to them on Twitter.
You're not
so
their
they
friends.
They come out here wearing their shit, wearing
you're not
their
logos.
Their
friends.
And it's like, well, if you're going to be selling all this shit, then you got to be Hulk Hogan, man. You can't be like the bad guy, cool things anymore. This ain't the 90s.
Just keep being
shit.
The bad guy.
Or I'm saying just be Hulk Hogan, man. Like, shill that shit. Get some That's of that true. Hulk Hogan, I'm a uber whore thing going.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
Be kissing babies. Be slapping high fives.
Slapping babies and kissing high fives.
If you're trying to humiliate the audience by making them kiss your ring and they're holding signs saying, I want to kiss your ring,
like, you're doing
something's
it wrong.
Broken in wrestling. Yeah. Something is broken in professional wrestling. Yeah,
so it was the most 80s gimmick done wrong.
Yours, sir.
My
if,
number
if you
one
had a number one.
Is the one match on the card that I enjoyed thoroughly.
Oh.
It was a big six-man tag.
Oh, I know where you're going with
Kenny
this.
Kenny King. You got a large gentleman named Shane Taylor.
Star of The Bachelor, Kenny
Might
King.
Might have been his first night in the company. I'm not sure. You know, I haven't paid much attention to Ring of Honor in a few years, but he announced himself to us. He introduced himself as if we didn't know who he was. So
And we didn't.
And their third tag team partner, Jay Lethal, indie wrestling standby, and they were in there against Suzuki-Gun. You know, Suzuki and the KES tag team of Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr.
I'd like to say we had Lance Archer's water bottle, which we were supposed to bring to our studio with us.
I told you to throw that away.
Well, I forgot it.
It had germs on it.
It's not in your house.
Whatever is in Lance Archer is now, like, just all over you.
Yeah.
That water bottle went straight on you, and then you just kept fiddling with it.
Yeah.
Just fiddling. Something stood out about this match, made it stand out on the card away from everything else, and it was that all these guys came out looking mean and pissed off and angry, like they wanted to kick some people's asses, and then they just had, like, a straightforward fight where they weren't, like, doing bits and
good times.
Yucking it up and winking. Yeah. It was a big wild brawl. They were taking it to the outside. Everybody was fighting at
good
once.
Time.
It was out of control. A lot of these guys were big. Like, you had some big bodies in this
you
match.
Did.
And
yeah.
I'm not saying, like, you got to go with a Vince McMahon. Everybody's got to be 6 foot whatever and weigh X amount of pounds. But you got to have some big guys out there. Like, wrestling can't be all little guys.
No.
You need to hear that sound of just, like, meat slapping against concrete when a big guy gets slammed, or, like, some guy gets thrown into the guardrail, like, and it's just so loud and shit gets pushed so violently.
Shane Taylor made those guardrails explode every time he hit them.
Big.
He's
like
a big old boy.
Dude, it's impressive to see some big guys getting thrown around, and that's just part of the appeal of this shit. And also, you talk about Suzuki. He might have been the most over guy of the night. Just, like, people wanting to see him wrestle, people believing in him, because, you know, he just, everything he does, he puts over that he's mean, that he's scary, that he doesn't mess around, that he's legitimately dangerous.
He gets in there
and people buy it. They
and
think
he
that
wants
he's
to
really
hurt
dangerous
you.
And he's really hurting people.
Yeah.
And it happens because he's never winking at anybody. There's no fucking moment where he's ever just like, we're all just
Look
here to sell t-shirts.
The curtain.
Yeah.
We're all friends.
No, he goes out there and
we're going out for pizza after this.
He bullies the refs. He bullies the announcers. He acts like he's gonna, you know, attack the audience. He stiffs the shit out of his opponents. He doesn't do anything cutesy, anything showy. Everything he does is meant to hurt the opponents. Like, he's not letting you look behind the curtain. He's presenting it as a real show that has depth and stakes. And
he's a real loose cannon.
So when he's out there, you suspend your disbelief and you actually care what he's going to do. This shit can't last forever with nobody caring about anything in the ring. Like, just it all just being a
somebody's
fun
gotta,
game that we're all in.
Somebody's got to give a fuck at some point.
Yeah, like, you look at that crowd. I think it's one of the biggest of ROH history, so you can't really completely disparage it, but this is such a niche, weird thing. All these chants, all these inside jokes.
It really was.
You're not going to draw in anyone new with this.
No.
Like, there's no room for your company, your product to grow doing this. You got to tell real stories. You got to sell it as being important. It can't just be kitschy, jokey shit.
Yep.
Kitschy, jokey shit.
Kitschy, jokey shit.
I don't know, maybe an anime character. Could be.
Oh, kitschy, jokey shit.
Yeah, I love that.
Kichijoki shi.
All the mangas. I've got the Kichijoki shit body pillows.
Like, Kichijoki shi.
I sleep with those every night. That's nice.
You can buy all this stuff at Hot Topic.
Oh, yeah. There's a little bento box lunches with Kichijoki shit on them that I eat every day. Like, they're healthy and they're tasty.
All of it.
So that's going to be our three count right there.
Yep.
That's going to be our episode for the week.
That's going to be it. Where are we going next week?
Next week, we've got a lot of stuff going on because it's our go-home show.
Uh-oh.
Last TV show before we get to Starrcade 85.
The Gathering?
Whoop, whoop. Ooh. So the last table setting, you know, the last little bits of grudge to be built before it all explodes at the biggest show of the year. for the World Championship Wrestling TV program. In addition to watching that, we're going to be doing a lot of social media.
We got it.
Here, you got us on Facebook now.
Oh, I got us on the FaceSpace. It's two names.
Uh-huh.
First name's Baby Oil.
Yeah.
Last name, Ann Blow.
Okay, that's great.
Find us there.
For us on there, we're going to be Facebooking along with all our Twitter and we've been doing, along with all our Instagram doing. You just search out Baby Oil and Blow on all this stuff because, you
all
know,
of it.
We didn't name ourselves like Pro Wrestling Podcast.
Pro Wrestling Fun Times.
The Slamcast. Yeah. Like, you know, we could actually just get all the usernames because we put a little goddamn thought into our podcast name.
Recognize,
this
son.
This is the premier 80s wrestling podcast.
It's what you're listening to. It's where you want to be.
It is where you want to be. And also, I'm going to put this on the record right now. I'm going to let everyone know.
Oh.
Stop. No more rumors. These are the two guys in podcasting who can do more one-arm push-ups than anyone else in the game.
Laying it down there.
Just going to let you know.
Come on.
I don't know how much that sells you, but just people should know. We will challenge
anybody
out there to try and do one more one-arm push-ups than us.
How many Mark Maron busting out?
Mark Maron, you know, he's looks slim, but he's an older gentleman.
Yeah, negative five.
He's a little bit too much into rock and roll and stuff to be working out all that much.
That's right.
I think we got him easy. Adam Carolla?
No.
That guy's...
No.
He used to be a boxer, I think. He might be pretty good at him.
Maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Another old guy.
So we're calling you all out. We're calling you all out. No one can do more one-arm push-ups.
We've been in there. We've been in the gym.
Come find us. That's an open challenge.
Pounding our protein.
Oh, what if people have like a weightlifting podcast?
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of guys.
Yeah, we didn't think that there.
One called the dumbbells.
Oh, I don't care. We're throwing it down.
Challenge rescinded.
Nope, I'm keeping it out. I'm keeping it out. I feel good about it.
Jesus
I like
Christ.
Our odds.
This is going to be humiliating.
Find us. Hashtag one arm push up. That's going to do it for us
right
this
here.
Week, right here, right Where? Now.
What is it?
Oh, it's Baby Oil and Blow.